Farmer Dan, you might back up a little bit and kind of give us what your initial vision was. You said it didn't quite work out that way, and maybe it's too fuzzy to begin with. Maybe it wrecked a few times. You had to take a few turns. Back up a little bit and give us that initial vision and then what it turned into be. And then let's start defining a little bit of these terms, like what is a homestead versus a farm, or what self-sufficiency versus preparedness. Start jumping to some of these terms so when we use them, people know what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I think initially the vision was more of a traditional modern agricultural farm setup where, you know, you're gonna have a few crops, you're gonna do them intensively, you're gonna kind of fit into the mold of the community of what the local land grant college wants you to do and things like that. And for us it always did kind of go back to, well, how much of this can we do ourselves, and how much of it, you know the one thing people got to understand, and we were talking about that at St. Benedict Center because I had brought some stuff up there, a lot of things and commodities that we're growing and then go to big factories now and get produced for us to consume, we don't realize that we don't make all kinds of cheese because we like all kinds of cheese. I mean, we do. But it was a method of storing milk. Yogurt was a method of storing milk. Alcohol, as much as we like to drink it, is a method of storing corn. You know, that would be, when apples came, well, you can do it all the apples. Well, you made vinegar and you made cider because they had other intrinsic values, like the food preparation and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is, We kind of got into that first mold. Well, I'm going to plant a bunch of sweet corn, and then I'm going to sell that and tomatoes, and we'll grow a couple animals, and it'd be that traditional farm that we seem to have thought of for the last 30, 40, 50 years. And the more we got into it, the more we tried to do things ourselves, and it watching The Good Life, and we're starting to do a lot of other reading. I mean, I was reading Joe Salatin's stuff back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And it kind of, then it kind of morphed from there into a little more of Joe's model, which is the subscriber model, where you have people that are your regular customers, and you're producing to them, and you're providing them a certain amount of their staple on a regular basis, and that got to be popular after a while.
Well, let me ask you this real quick, Dan. I want to clarify something, just to make sure in my mind. So your original vision was literally an all-in farm, like, massive tractors, multiple.
Yep.
Okay. And then you said, okay, that's going to require all these employees. It's going to require, the fencing and the irrigation and the whatever. You started kind of, and this, I'm kind of reading into this intentionally. I'm being devil's advocate a little bit. Like, tell me where I'm wrong. And you started going, okay, wait, that's more than I want. And so you started saying, okay, scale down. What is achievable for husband and wife? Is that what the goal then became?
Well, it became that. And then, when we had children came along, and we started, we actually moved more into the raising animals. Traditionally, we started mostly doing horticulture and raising vegetables and such things. When the kids came along, we went back, we got more into getting animals. And, so now we've done kind of both sides of it. I mean, growing up, I did a lot of this, but, I mean, it was never a primary vocation even when I was growing up. So, we're kind of searching for what we were going to, what we wanted to do. And I got away from that whole factory method of how you, even though I work in factories, understood it, that this is not the way I want it. It doesn't give me the satisfaction, nor does it yield for me the quality and the value of what we're trying to get out of it, whether it simply is what we're getting and eating, or what you're producing, or what you're able to provide for other people. So we slowly morphed it more into a sustainability model, and then expanded that from there. Then that's when you start taking your surplus and flogging it.
I got you. So that's where. So you listed four when you were quote unquote trying to define it. You listed The Good Life, which we talked about. Have More Plan, which is that booklet that you said we're trying to get republished. Joel Salatin materials, the Townsend Plan. So you started reading, seeing, experiencing what we might call more of a home style methodology, a homesteading methodology, and that did fit what you wanted to do.
It did. And then, like, the Townsend Plan, I say the Townsend Plan. John Townsend is a guy out in Indiana who makes reproduction equipment and costumes and stuff for 18th and early 19th century reenactors, movies, and stuff like that. However, for the last 15 years almost now, you can find him on YouTube. He has produced a number of series of how things were done or made or cooked or preserved in the 18th century. And he doesn't do it as a plan to show you how to go out and homestead. He just does it to show how things used to be done. And of course, you know, hawk his wares. But, you know, you want to start looking at things, like, well, you know, what did they do before there was refrigeration?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Sears, I haven't even watched the last one he did where he actually built a cabin and they made a homestead. I said, well, what would they have done if they had, you know, gone 25 miles, which would have been a long distance out into the next set of the wilderness, and what would they have done? You know, can you preserve eggs and salt? Do you know how to pot meat?
Mm-hmm.
And they're very short little videos. I mean, you want to look at things, and I mean, they're very insightful, again, into what you can do and how much you can use. That's the next part of something eventually we get into. You know, you waste nothing. And I think another big revelation for people, if you want to get into this, because you talked about, you know, how much do you want to devote to this, or, you know, if you have a full-time job. And all. Another thing is a mindset you have to think about is you don't waste anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
First started raising pigs, my wife and I, you know, we talked to some relatives. Oh, yeah, and one of her uncles. Oh, yeah, I'll buy the bacon and tenderloin. Well, yeah, I'll take the bacon and tenderloin, too. But, you know, there's the rest of an animal you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And you say, well, I've never had that, or I don't know if I like that. Well, you know what? If preparedness and thinking of, well, you know, the supply chain is maybe not as robust as we think it is, you better start learning to like it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, and again, I could probably do this if I was really in a pinch, but I haven't done it regularly since I was a kid. We'd go to my grandparents' house, and when we killed a pig, we called it cochon lay down here, which is a milk-fed pig is what it means, and you roast it. You barbecue it, basically, put it on a spit, and cook it all day. But we killed the pig, and then we boiled the water and poured it over the pig and scraped the hair off, and then we gutted the pig. And I remember my grandmother taking the bowels out and washing them, and then they stuffed that with basically sausage meat or dirty rice sometimes, depending on what they wanted to make. But we were actually using the bowels of the pig.
It's still done today. When I make sausage, I do use natural casings, but of course, there's a lot of artificial manufactured stuff that replaces it today. So, but yeah, these are the kind of things. It's like, you know, is it ever going to get to that? Are you ever going to want to do that? You know, it's like when my daughter first got her driver's license. We got back home, got in the driveway. The first thing I made her do was to change the tire. I made her change the tire. She said, oh, I'm never going to have to do this stuff or want to do this stuff. I said, I hope you always have enough money and you never have to.
Yeah.
But you know how to.
Well, you know, it's funny, Dan, because just this afternoon, I won't tell you what the project was, but I got one of my daughters doing something, and it was a complete failure. I'll just call it a failure. I won't use any other words. And I'm like, okay, you know what? That's it. That is it. Every one of my daughters is outside with me on the weekends doing whatever I'm doing for the next month and a half or 6 months. I don't know how long it takes before I can say you guys have at least achieved some level of physical production. I mean, they're just inept, and it's my own fault. It's my own damn fault.
Well, and you know, that's one of the reasons I think I did 4-H for so many years, and I got into it. Was I remember we were down the new fairgrounds, and I taught 5 or 6 kids to take 2 tire irons and be able to change a tire and put a tube in it because we had to fix the trailers for the tires. I don't know if they'll ever do it again. I don't know if they'll ever remember it, but
yeah.
I'd like to think that it maybe put something in their minds that you can do these things, and there are ways to do them other than going and asking somebody else or paying somebody else.
Well, like when I had, I think it was Joel, it might have been Franklin, I don't remember, but they said, just try, because in trying, you're going to probably fail, but you're going to learn, and then you go, okay, don't do it that way next time. Just the sense of trying things. So Brian in the chat room says, I just processed a pasture-raised pig this weekend. Those pork chops were beautiful. So good for you, Brian. See, there are other crusaders doing this, and boy, what a benefit it is to have Farmer Dan or Brian or the friends we've made through our interviews with Franklin and Joel Salatin and all these people. You have resources, guys, that most people don't have. Just because you're a crusader, and that's a big deal. It really is. I mean, I don't think Dan would say he'd like to do it all by himself again for 20 years and just figure it out by knocks and twist, right? Wouldn't you have liked to have a mentor all along, Dan?
Well, I was fortunate, as I said, that I had good people not only in my family that knew how to work with their hands and had their own businesses, but, you know, I worked for 10 or 12 years when I was in, school up and through high school and even into college. You know, I had a guy, he had a farm, he raised pigs. He was also a contractor and a mason, so he taught me how to raise the pigs and raise corn. He also taught me how to lay concrete blocks. So, and another gentleman, taught me how to repair small engines. He had a lawnmower repair business, and he was a friend of the family, and he said, come on, I'll teach you how to do this. And I worked for him part-time fixing engines. So I was fortunate that I had these kind of people that were able to impart this knowledge to me. And, of course, I wanted to.
Yeah.
There are some people who have, I still struggle, Dave, with things. I look at people and it's like, okay, you pay somebody to mow your lawn and then you go pay somebody else to let you go to a gym and run on a treadmill. I can't wrap my head around that kind of thinking. Well, I don't like to do this. Well, that's, again, but anyway, it's a side conversation. But it's that level of thinking that I don't understand those things, so sometimes it gets difficult for me. But we are talking to people who do understand that. That man's right. I bet you that was going to be some of the best pork chop he's ever had. If he's never done it before, he's going to want to do it again because there's no comparison to what you.
All right, so Molly, I'm going to have to task Molly with this job. Anything Dan says that sounds like a topic that we need to have a whole show on, you got to jot those down because I'm not smart enough to remember them, and I can't jot them all down myself when I'm over here. So that was one. Why can't your exercise be your backyard where you're working your homestead instead of, like he said, paying someone to cut your lawn and then running to the health club? That's a good one, Dan. I got to remember that one. All right. So back to this outline because it was beautiful. And I know you guys don't have it. Maybe I can post it next time on. I've made a whole lot of notes on it, though. So I loved your differentiation between preparedness and self-sufficiency. And I realize that I'm apparently more of a prepper than I am self-sufficient because I've just hadn't had the time to do the things that I think are necessary for self-sufficiency. So I've done a little bit more probably prepping. But Dan, what is your distinction between prep and self-sufficiency?
Okay, and I put that down there because obviously there's a lot of overlap between the two. And it's not that one is better or worse than the other, because depending on your circumstances, I mean, let's face it, if your choice is to live in a large city and have that kind of career in life, you're not likely to be raising too many chickens.
Right.
On the other hand, it's also been, in the common pop culture and the stupid reality shows and all that, they've kind of made certain, people have certain visions in their head of what it means. The way I kind of broke it down is that preparedness, generally, that's to reduce or mitigate the effects of a disaster. What does that mean? And if you do watch people, they actually have a disaster in mind, whether it's economic collapse, EMP burst in the sun. They kind of zero in on one or two things that say, this is what I'm going to prepare for because I think this is the most likely thing that's going to happen.
Sure.
And it's directed towards specific events. I mean, there's no, I'm going to prepare for everything. Okay, and I'm going to, I'm going to live forever, too. there's often specific sets, steps you take to offset specific circumstances. And it's often associated more with hoarding. And I don't mean that necessarily in a negative connotation, but it's collecting and having things. I mean, look at what they, look at the commercials. Oh, buy 30 years worth of food. It lasts forever. Just
right.
Put that in your basement and you're good. Well, that is a way to do it. Now, I'll admit I got some MREs in the basement.
Sure.
I thought to have some of these things. But, some people say, I got this straw you can suck through water that'll clean it up, and I got 30 years worth of food in the basement that I add that water to, and we'll be fine. Okay, that's one way of doing it. Self-sufficiency, it's the ability to supply one's own needs without external assistance. And that isn't necessarily, say, one's. That isn't necessarily you as an individual or the Lone Ranger. That may be a group or a community, but it's the ability to supply the need. It automatically assumes that you're going to be accumulating, or I sure wrote it differently, making things of intrinsic value. And that doesn't necessarily, that may be some gold and silver you're keeping on the side, but that means that you're making things that are going to be valuable and long-lasting to other people. Not necessarily food, but that's what first comes to mind. I think the biggest differentiation between the two is you're creating the ability to replenish, not just accumulate.
Yeah, I thought it was a great distinction because I don't know if I've heard that before from anybody but you. Maybe, I don't know. I don't think I have. But when you see, when you hear it, it strikes you because it is an important distinction to make. And like you said, there is some overlap. As a matter of fact, I thought your second point there, automatically assuming that you automatically assume you accumulate certain things of intrinsic value. There is a little bit of prepper in the self-sufficiency guy. He likes the idea of having extra tools around, or having the spare batteries, or having, you know, a way to generate clean water, let's say. So he's going to have some prep items. But his real goal is different, and that is, I want to be able to produce the thing, not just have it stored in a closet. And I think that's an important distinction because, it helps you pick your vision a little bit. It helps you say, you know, you can be only a prepper. Like I said, my preparation right now, between self-sufficiency and preparation, I'm probably 80% prep and 20% self-sufficiency. Or no, I wouldn't even give myself 20%. 11% self-sufficiency. I got my fruit trees. I got my chickens. And that's about it. I mean, like, I don't have much else that I can say, hey, I can produce some food. I just got a little bit. But I do have a lot more storage stuff. So it's kind of a vision, and it kind of helps you scale where you want to go. I think Dan would agree with me. Don't you think more people need to move into more self-sufficiency, though?
I think they do. And I mean, I think there's some very basic things, which, you know, we don't get to them today. We can discuss, you know, next time about what people you can do and you should do. And there are things that again, it's really going to depend more on your circumstances. And, you know, people have personal reasons they want to live a certain lifestyle, certain, you know, economic or family obligations or whatever. I mean, again, whether you're living in a big city, or you're living in a garden apartment. I mean, there's only so many things you can do, but there are things you can do. And beyond, you know, you're going to see probably more a preparedness methodology.
Yeah.
You are living in, you know, and whether you've chosen that or not, to live in a certain mindset as opposed to going out, you know, and having 10, 20, 30, 50 acres.
So, well, you know that's going to be so Molly, check that one down. So, Dan, you know what I think we're going to do in a future show, too? So we don't have to be speculative about if this, then that, and whether you made that choice. We're going to actually say, okay, urban dwellers, and we're going to deal with the apartment guys and the small condo people, and you're going to give us, you know, their best bet for, you know, surviving any type of cataclysm. And then we'll go to the guys who actually have the ability to own, let's say, an acre of ground, and we'll do the 1 acre homestead, and then we'll go to the 5 acres or whatever. I want to build it out so no one can say we didn't address them. But I also don't want to do it in such a way where we go, hey, it depends on your circumstances. I want to be able to get to the exact circumstance and talk to it. And I think you could do it.
I agree. I think that'd be a great approach, and hopefully it'll be beneficial to a lot of people. And, you know, I look for feedback. Again, there are a few things here I think I'd say, yes, I go to consider myself a subject matter expert. And there's other things like, yeah, I've been reading about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's, and of course, some of it's going to be based on a certain amount of opinion, but,
sure.
I think it'd be a great conversation for a lot of people because it's starting to become real, my friend. I think more people are beginning to understand that.
Absolutely.
If you do study history, you know, what goes around comes around.
Yeah. Well, we got a few minutes left here, Dan. So instead of jumping into the next thing on the outline, which we'll do next time you come on, which is basically deciding on scale, which I think would be very important for everyone. If you're an apartment dweller and you're dreaming of a 500-acre farm, you might be taking a bigger jump than you want. So Dan's going to help you talk about scale next time and what that really means. But what I want to ask you is, what is your scale currently? Like, so how much do you have, and what do you do on your farm?
Yeah, well, we have 35 acres. It's actually in two different pieces. There's about a 20-acre piece, or a 25-acre piece, and there's a 10-acre piece that's a few miles away. And again, that was kind of those false starts. I probably should have said this as an example.